Have you ever thought how the gogo on the side of the road, selling her vegetables, or the flower trader at the station is affected by the decisions made in the legislature regarding trade and industry? Or even if their voices are ever considered in those ever talked about consultative processes? Ms. Rashida Muller is the national president of the National Informal Traders Alliance of South Africa, and she joins me today to talk about her work, the organization's members, and the voices of the trader outside your car window at the traffic light. Thank you so much, Rashida, for coming on the show with us today. And I'm really, really looking forward to this conversation and understanding a little bit more about yourself and your organization. And thank you for taking the time. I think our audience will also really appreciate having you on here with us. So your organization is called NITSA, National Informal Traders Alliance of South Africa. That's a mouthful. But what does that actually mean? Who are your members? How does your organization work?
Well, it is called NITSA.
Okay.
NITSA, National Informal Traders Alliance of South Africa. It is a representative body of the informal sector. Now, you know, the informal sector is a huge sector, under-acknowledged and undervalued. So it is important for our organization to bring the voice of the vulnerable informal worker to the fore.
So who is this informal sector? I mean, I think if I think back to the Thabo Mbeki years, talking about two economies in South Africa, that's kind of the first time that this thing became elevated into national news. But who's informal and who are the workers in this sector, as you call it?
Yes. Now, you know, the unemployment rate is so high. Many people have been retrenched over the years, and many people can't find jobs, and they have to put, you know, the gogo's not going to sleep unless her child has had a plate of food. So we are the informal trader on the street corner, at the taxi rank, in the market squares, in your home mobile shops, spaza shops, home-based workers. We are all working for ourselves. We are self-sustainable, but we are also workers. We have, through not a desire, but through necessity, through survival, we had to find work, even if we eke out a survival. It's not that easy. Myself, personally, well, I think my story is a bit different, but I'd like to say that I found myself, I think it was more of a divine intervention, because I have been a teacher in the beginning. But I don't know, you know, in the 80s, now you can imagine how old I am. In 1987, you know, I found myself yearning to be selling my own products. And I left teaching. And I went on to Cape Town Station. And that's where I started my journey in 1987. And I realized that we were extremely vulnerable and not organized. And I don't know if I just have it in my blood, you know, my forefathers have been exiled from the East to be here, from Indonesia and Java. And I think I'm one of those rebels. The blood is still streaming through me. So I organize the traders into movements, and it's never stopped.
Well, you're talking to us from Cape Town today, and it is a national association, the Soviet. So how do people get involved? You said, you know, the traders in the street corners, the gogos, and that does also call to mind a trader or a business owner, entrepreneur, who is a little bit undereducated, as it were. So how do those in the informal sector, how do they become part of this network? How do you know who actually
should be in the network and should be benefiting from all of your hard work, and people who are maybe just trying their luck?
Yeah, no, we do have a website. We do have www.nitasa.org.za. All our information is there. You can even apply to be a member there. Now, because it was in the 80s, you know, I started mobilizing Cape Town and then Western Cape. And then we have we had Dr. Pat Horn from StrictNet International. And she has mobilized 50-odd countries across the world to be in a global network of StrictNet. And we then were... We got engaged with her. And then being in Cape Town and being that voice for the traders, I found myself being a representative of the Western Cape. But we went throughout the 9 provinces of South Africa. So that is how it started. That was about 2013. We launched the first national structure, and all 9 provinces were part of it. And we are still busy mobilizing that. You know, we don't have any resources. Mm-hmm. So basically, we are social workers. We work because we have a passion, because we are passionate to those who are unemployed, and we see the challenges and the struggles that occurs on a daily basis. And many across the country are in leadership, like I am, with me and other. There are another 1 or 2 other national organizations as well. But we do this work for our members, and, you know, we push to get our voice heard, especially by government.
And, you know, you talk about these challenges, and I know here in Johannesburg, we'll see from time to time, there'll be like drives, and there'll be people from the JMPD coming into the streets and taking the wares of hawkers. What are some of the struggles that you find your members are faced with across the country, and how do you counter that? How do you mitigate against such?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have built up relationships with the Department of Small Business Development. And in every province, we ensure that our leadership, our provincial leadership, is in touch with provincial government, the Department of Economic Development and Tourism, basically. And at a local level, in every municipality, and we have over 300 municipalities in our country, it's imperative that the voice of the informal sector is being heard. Now, according to, you know, our constitution, it is the duty of municipalities to basically ensure that there are opportunities and create open spaces for markets to take place. We do have many bylaws that are still very much draconian. We also work with SALGA. And, you know, SALGA is the South African Local Government Association. And we have had engagements with them that we together formulated a suitable draft bylaw, which was then, you know, formalized. But many of the municipalities just do not follow it. But it's about us putting the pressure on as the leadership of these organizations to ensure that our members are not harassed, that they are protected, and that we continue to be able to create an enabling environment for them, which is definitely not easy. You can see along the roads and, you know, along the streets, everywhere where you drive, you find very not very enabling areas where we trade from. So that does hamper growth and sanitization, etc. So we're still working on those matters. We're actually thinking of going onto the national dialogue. We're actually having a meeting tonight where we discuss the informal economies, and not only the traders, also the taxi drivers, the domestic workers, the home-based workers, the spaza shop, all of us. We're in a dialogue tonight to discuss the role we should play at the national dialogue. But anyway, the main challenge...
You haven't been invited as an organization. And
no.
Why? Why do you think that is? I mean, you are a national organization. You seem to be recognized. Why is it that you were left out of this process in your view?
Yeah, well, we're going to finalize all that tonight, and then we'll probably take up our pen, and then we will, want to be invited and be there to be heard. So, but many of the other challenges that we experience, and currently we have a huge, huge challenge of the tobacco bill being implemented in its current form. Now, I've been working on that since 2018. Myself and our general secretary even went right up to Pretoria to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. And we had engaged the Department of Health. And they promised to get back to us, but there was never a real one-on-one with us with regard to the tobacco bill.
So, I mean, it's interesting that you talk about this bill, which had a lot of engagement, or we were told, so widely engaged with, but in the same breath as kind of saying, even with something that's been so widely publicized, like the National Dialogue, where people were being told that people's voices, the voices of South Africans, are being solicited to be part of this. And you were not heard when the bill was having its oral hearings? You're saying in that
form? We, NITASA and the informal sector, we were aware and we attended some public forum where the public participation was. We delivered written submissions. We wrote from provinces and from the national organization. Then I was very excited because I was going to present in Parliament to the Portfolio Committee on the 14th of August. But a couple of days before, I got the invitation to be inclusive. But then immediately after that, it was withdrawn and said that I did not make a written submission to be heard orally in Parliament.
No, I mean, as an informal, you're trying to bring into a formalized environment informal traders and people, vulnerable workers within this part of the economic sector. Why do you want to be part of that? You are already operating in the periphery. Why is it so important for you that you are part of this formalization, as it were?
Well, it is the tobacco bill impacts terribly on the informal traders. The informal traders on every corner, every taxi rank, every train station, they sell these loosies, the loose ones, because the packet is just too expensive. Now, the sale of loose cigarettes will be banned, and you could be jailed up to 10 years or a massive fine would you have to pay. We don't have extra monies. All the monies is in today and out tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So, and that is a major challenge that we have. And if this is going to be done, we're going to be terribly out of work again.
But Aunty Rashida, I mean, I'm also thinking that part of the problem, as it were, the way that is framed, is that this informal trade environment is actually precisely where this illegal, illicit cigarette selling happens. And this is why the government is saying it would need to clamp down. This is not your view? This is not what informal trade
is? No, that is not the actual view. That's not the real view. Mm. The illicit cigarettes is being sold even in the formal shops. The illicit cigarettes is a bigger challenge that government should focus on and have SAPS dealing with it. We are not the police. We cannot deal with it. We let our traders know that illicit cigarettes are, it is illegal to sell illicit cigarettes, and that they should buy the proper brands and sell that. But the illicit trade has soared since COVID, where a packet of cigarettes became, not the proper brands, became 100 rand or more to buy. So that is a bigger challenge that government should focus upon. And we put our hand out to collaborate and work with government on driving out illicit cigarettes, because the revenue that is lost by government could very much afford us our enabling environment and provide for us.
So speaking of the revenue that is collected within the informal trade, one of the things that we often also hear about is that this informal trading environment is such a hotbed, because nobody really knows who is there, the local traders versus people who are foreign nationals working in that environment, where this money goes, that because it's all a cash-based environment, no one really knows where this money goes to and how this money is transferred to all the people. How are you, as a national alliance, working with government to ensure that this trade, this informal trade in this economic cluster and sector, is enabling for government to also be able to do its work, that is ensuring that the right people are in the environment, that the right things are sold, and that this money doesn't go into funding activities that are untoward?
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. That's why I said we trade on government municipal land. Now, let me just take our organization, my local organization in Cape Town, on the Grand Parade. We have an area that is owned by the city of Cape Town. It is then given to us to trade upon, whereby we have to submit each and every name. So there is a good understanding between the municipal officers and ourselves. This is who we are. This is what we sell. And this is the rules and the regulations also from them, that we do not abuse the land that they give us to trade upon. So it is imperative that there is partnerships. And, you know, I've attended so many workshops, national workshops, where our minister, our small business, Stella Nadabeni, Stella Nadabeni, where she has asked that we collaborate and be partners. But it never comes to time of implementation. It always stops at the summit or at that workshop, and there's no follow-up and no teams and no regular engagements. I must say I'm very proud what we've done in Cape Town, because in Cape Town we have regular meetings with the city of Cape Town. We have quarterly meetings, we have bi-monthly meetings of different areas where we bring up the hot issues, the challenges, they bring up what their plans are, etc. And this should take place throughout the country, right up to national government level. But there's much more talk than actual delivery when it comes to that stage. And please do bear in mind that we are not a funded movement. We have to sometimes beg for a sponsorship just to get together into a meeting, because, you know, we are an NPO. We are a national, non-profit organization.
And you're a member-based organization?
Yes, we're member-based, but it is so hard to actually, you know, SA Stats reports that there are over 6 million informal traders. But for us to gather those names onto our databases, we need resources. And that resource we lack. So what we do in every area where we are, we try to mobilize from the street organizations that we have. And that is how we built our provincial structures. But we're far from really having, each and every name into our databases. Like I said, tonight we are meeting not only as informal traders, but as the informal economy, where we have representatives of waste pickers, taxi drivers, and et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, it is huge. It's massive, but we are not given a budget. We really just on a limb. We never give up, and we say nothing about us without us.
And in your estimation, how big would you say your organization and the voice that it carries, and who the most important part of the government structure outside of the minister are the individuals that you would like to see a more consistent interaction with?
Indeed, we would be able to document even more membership if the municipalities work with us. Imagine every 300 municipalities engage leadership, no matter at what level, whether it's only 100 traders in a small dorpie, or whether it's 1,000 or 10,000, hundreds of thousands in the metros, example. So we want that collaboration, that partnership, to work with the city, with the cities, which are basically the municipalities, and the trader organizations. These trader organizations, and I've already asked in the Western Cape, that we are capacitated in leadership, in training, in resources, because if we grow, the status of the province will also grow.
Do you feel that being incorporated in a more formalized way, do you feel that it would be a benefit to your members, or it may take away from your members because there's so much red tape that comes with being formalized? You have to register. You know, there was a lot of talk about a year ago with spaza shops and registering spaza shops and all the people that work in it and the food grading and all of that kind of stuff. Do you feel that it would be a benefit or a hindrance to some of your members and their businesses?
Let me tell you a story, an actual, factual story. In 1997, we formed a limited company on Cape Town Station called Enclodec Limited, encompassing the lower deck traders of Cape Town Station. We launched it with a bang. Naledi Pandor was our keynote speaker. Our mayor was present. And we were given the land on a lease agreement that we owned as the organization. And we then made it a profitable movement where each individual trader paid a minimum amount per day. The excess went into profiteering. For example, we bought a property out in Langebaan. We bought a plot out in some other area also, Fisherhaven, etc. And the 500 rand that the informal trader gave us to be a shareholder eventually gave him about 60 odd thousand at the end, when we had to dissolve because our land was taken away from us. You see, I think when we become organized, I think maybe big business don't like that about us, because we might be micro in our individual capacities, but we are macro in our collective movements.
That's quite a fascinating story. And do you think that could be replicated or recreated with support?
Absolutely. We have to get the leadership in sync with the opportunities of the mass that is in our sector and how to develop and grow them, like COSATU and other unions. They have their business arm, their investment arms as well. But because there are so many challenges on the ground, you know, it's so difficult to move into the bigger issues. But it's always been my vision to do that again. We did it in about two areas. And then also we lost the land in Greenpoint.
Why did you lose the land? If it's a profitable entity, if it's got a responsible leadership structure and the corporate governance is in place, what went wrong?
What went wrong is the stadium had to be built, and we were about 1,000 traders around the stadium, and the old stadium had to be, you know, demolished for the new stadium. They promised us to get back into the stadium as soon as it's built. It was a note in the record of decision by the then MEC, Tasneem Essop. However, it took us from 2009 till this year to get back. Wow. But I never gave up. We went to the lawyers. We went to LRC. We want to thank deeply the Legal Resource Center for not giving up on us. And this year, we actually got the return of our space. But still not 100% certain, like August, we couldn't trade because there's sometimes events and that, and we are altered. But we have started, and it's moving wonderfully again.
And what of the national movement? So some of these successes that you speak of, and of course being so much closer on the ground in Cape Town, what of the national movement? What other kind of successes and factors are in that national movement that you would like to share with us?
Well, I'd like to share the fact that we are engaged with the Department of Small Business Development, although it's at a snail pace. We are acknowledged there, but we feel the reason why we want to go to the national dialogue is because we could actually have greater impact and that people could realize who we really are. I don't think, you know, the country's population even, or even government or people who work with us understand the importance of informal work. Imagine those people couldn't go out daily to go earn their daily bread and butter. What would have happened to them? The unemployment would have even doubled at the moment, you know. So at a national level, although we have achieved success there, I also participate at NEDLAC in the work stream of the small business, so that I could give input from the from the perspective of the informal trade. We are having a representative there this week. Friday, there's a summit, a NEDLAC summit. I think it's for the new year. And one of our members, our deputy secretary, she'll be attending there. And we get acknowledged at the national level, but it's just not enough. We do have programs, but the programs are not reaching the millions. It reaches, I'd say, hundreds, you know, where you get, for example, an incentive. So you go through a training period, and then once you have succeeded that and you've registered your business, etc., I don't think you actually have to register. You can just be an informal trader as well, and you can register with your municipality. Then you get sort of up to 10,000 rand infrastructure. Like if you are selling food, you can get your gas stoves and things like that, and your pots and pans and things.
And what kind of impact? You know, things like this SPASA registration drive that was talked about, what kind of impact has that had? What's happened with that? Where is it?
We also ask you that question, where is it? So there was a great, you know, why on that. I had many, many interviews on that one as well. And things slow down. And things disappear, like news, you know. it's hyped now and enforcement doesn't take place. There's always a case of not enough capacity. We don't have enough staff. Because if you think about it, even if you go to a township, how many households do not do business from their homes, from their garages, buying in front of their houses, selling to the neighbors? People are living. People are living. So what government must do is create that enabling environment for them. But it's always a case of we don't have enough staff. There's a lack of staff. That's why now, also in Cape Town, we are pushing for the self-management of markets, that the land where the informal traders trade upon be given to reputable organizations so that they could manage it and the city doesn't, the municipality doesn't have to have capacity. There could be an oversight by municipality and a regular checkup in that, but it will be run by us. And also what led to all the, what we call the illegal trading was because nobody was monitoring. Nobody was there to look after it, to manage the areas. So there's overtrading in areas like Johannesburg as well. I know I do go there for meetings quite a bit. And also in Cape Town and Bellville Station, and just overtrading happens because there's no control.
Do you, you know, because you're in Cape Town, you have an experience of a DA-led city in Cape Town, but also because of your national portfolio within the organization, you have access to the government as it's currently structured. Do you see a difference in what the GNU government is or not?
Well, I must tell you, I think it's because who we are. I have seen so many mayors, so many high officials pass through my lifetime. Every 3 years or 4 years or 2 years, they change, but not us. And we, because of the pressure I think that we have upheld here, we have achieved this regular participation and partnership. And, you know, we do have allies. We have allies in the form of, you know, SAFTU and GOSATU and SAMU and unions that will lobby with us if we are inside. We often go on marches as well. For the national, I think it is more, it has to be brought down to its province, because it's in the province that you can actually measure, you can measure success in the province. What are they willing to do? What are the districts willing to do? What are they doing with skills development and training and workshops, etc.? At the national government, I think not enough being done, not enough. And I think you've just given me another task to follow up.
Well, I think that's a perfect place to end. And thank you so much for your time. Thank you for an incredibly informative conversation, and really good luck. And what I hear more than anything from what you've said is that it's far more important that you as an organization remain consistent and committed and keep pushing the government structures that you work with to do what you need them to do, to hold them accountable. And I think that's quite a valuable piece of information and insight. So thank you so much, Aunty Rashida. Thank you for coming on and good luck. I think it's a big job.
Thank you, Mercedes. But it actually keeps me alive, because I think I would have been underground already if I didn't have. I have to fight, you see. It's not a vicious fight, but it is something that keeps me going and my adrenaline flowing. And I think that's keeping me alive. So, yes, I don't know. I eat, drink, and sleep the sector.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
It's a great pleasure. It's a great, great pleasure. Thank you.
My biggest mental shift from this conversation is the importance of persistence and insisting on your voice being heard and taking your place at the table. Through change in government representatives, Ms. Rashida Muller keeps giving them hell and insisting that they hear her voice.